Did you hear about Conrad Thompson's new podcast?
I did not.
It's called Vinnie Mac's Pool Party. No, just kidding.
Weekend at Vinnie's.
You know what? That might be the one that breaks the internet if that old man has a podcast. Let me tell you about all my excursions.
No, I'm telling you.
Hey, folks, if you'd like to support this show, we would really appreciate that support. And the best way to do is by clicking on the show notes and clicking on the link that takes you to our Brainbuster Tea Store, where you can get a Turnbuckle Boogie t-shirt.
I want
to
call them Turnbuckle Boogie Nipple Protectors.
Yeah, if you really want to discourage a mugger, wear this shit around.
No, oh, it's intimidating.
They'll get bashful, put their knife away, turn around. I can't fuck with this guy.
Yeah, he's tough.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Let's boogie! Gang, welcome to Turnbuckle Boogie. I am professional wrestling historian Timothy Styles, and with me is professional wrestler and my good buddy, by the way.
Yeah.
Cutthroat Cody Hancock.
Yes, indeed. How are you today, sir?
I'm not too bad. We just finished watching AEW Dynamite.
You caught the tail end. I caught the front end.
I caught everything.
Yeah. I was only able to catch the opening segment and the first match, and then after that I had to eat.
Yes, I received a text. Hey, you, whatever you do, you have to watch that opening segment. And I'll spoil it for everyone, because it was for you people listening, it was this past Wednesday, but it was CM Punk coming out and saying a bunch of naughty things about Jon Moxley, and then Jon Moxley coming out
and doing snow angels.
Yeah, coming out and doing a bunch of naughty things back.
Well, yes.
I think he built it up. It was James Mattern, by the way, who texted me and you.
Yeah.
I think he built it up too much for me, because I was like, eh.
I enjoyed it. I
didn't hate it.
I enjoyed the match immensely, between the 2 out of 3 falls match between Danielson and Garcia.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Me too.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it's really, really cool to see. And I think that for the people that were there live, it was a much better experience, because anytime they went into commercial in that match, I'm just like, I can't hear them hitting each other.
Yeah, that was going to be my next comment, is it's a problem for the viewer, not a problem for them, because it means advertising dollars.
Yes.
For Tony Khan and AEW, which, good on you. And I'm glad that we're at least getting a picture in picture. But goddamn, does it feel like there's a lot of ads.
Yeah. Well, hopefully at some point.
By the way, let me be clear. I do not want you to show less ads per hour and stretch the show into 3 hours.
Yeah, let's not do that.
No. There's already one fucking show that does that, and I don't watch that.
And more wrestling is not the answer. We've discussed this before. But I think it'd be really cool if, by the time the AEW decides to launch a streaming service, if that is ever in the cards, to where they would actually give that as an incentive to the viewer. Like, hey, if you watch this live, you had to do this picture-in-picture nonsense. But if you watch it on our app, you can see it without the picture-in-picture, and you can actually hear how amazing that match was. Like, I super jealous to not be able to be in that room to watch that go down.
Sure. Well, you know, here's a good way to use your imagination. Just keep slapping your thighs a bunch during the commercials. God damn.
Either that, or we could just like get a slide whistle, you know, just add our own sound effects to it.
That would be funny. Yeah, we'll do all the Foley. The Foley for during commercial breaks.
Get the Wilhelm scream in there during a dive spot.
Yeah. Yes. Speaking of thigh slaps, is it his name? Roosh?
Roosh. Yes. Yes.
They had a spot, the Young Bucks and his team. And I think one of the Jacksons was down in the corner, And he, you know, does the run and rebound off of the turnbuckle to run at him. And you think something's going to happen. And then he stops when the guy blocks his face. And then he just gives him like the Orange Cassidy kind of kick.
Yep.
Like, I couldn't be bothered to attack you. But, I mean, there's got to be some magic. You can't just slap yourself on the ass.
Well, I think that for me, there's some people, I didn't see this, was the guy in the corner when he booted him?
Yes.
Like, yeah, okay, so I've noticed something that luchadors do, and it's a very brave thing to do.
Mm.
They'll prioritize smacking their leg as opposed to protecting their face from the boot. And that is a whole level of bravery that I am not willing to sacrifice, because I have run into boots in the corner before that have nearly put me out for at least a couple seconds.
Sure.
So I'm getting my hand up on that and protecting my fucking temple as opposed to smacking my fucking leg.
No, the guy, the Jackson brother who was on the ground was not smacking his own leg.
I understand what you're saying. I'm saying that if I'm running into somebody and if they're in the corner and they put their boot up, I'm going to protect my temple as opposed to smack my leg to make a sound for their strike.
Right. I think I may have explained it not as eloquently as I would have liked to, but I'm going to move on.
Lucha boys love to smack that leg.
Yeah, they sure do.
Yeah.
Well, folks, today's episode is about one of the greats to a lot of people. I don't know necessarily that I'm like so in love, but I'm showing respect here, so to speak. If I had my way, I'd probably cut him out and put in Tajiri, because I love me some fucking Tajiri.
Yes, I know that you're a big Tajiri fan.
But today is Hayabusa.
Yes.
You know, I remember late 90s, early 2000s, late 90s, getting a whole series of FMW tapes.
The Tokyo Pop releases.
Yeah, Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, was the promotion. And I think what led me in that direction, probably like a lot of people, was that I think there were, you know, Mick Foley or, you know, Cactus Jack tapes.
Yes, I remember the cover of Yokohama Deathmatch had Mick Foley on the cover, and the little caption was "Cactus Jack is back."
Right.
I remember those covers vividly.
Yeah, I mean, because for the average American professional wrestling fan, I think it really is the June 98 King of the Ring that probably exposed them to some of this hyper realistic stuff.
Yeah.
The average fan was not. That was the first time I had ever seen thumbtacks.
Yep.
I believe. And I have a feeling that it's probably the same for 95% of the people in that arena that night. So it's something to not be believed. On top of the fact that, he went through the top of the cage and went over the side of the cage and all this sort of stuff. But it was so endearing that, you know, Mick Foley became something of an icon.
Yes.
Because he was on the biggest stage doing that stuff.
On the biggest stage doing that stuff, but there was years before that happened.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, across the pond. Yes, I'll let you go.
No, continue, please.
Then, so you had thumbtacks being used in American wrestling, and then all of a sudden you have clips being aired on WWE television of the Kawasaki Deathmatch tournament for IWA.
Very short clips.
Yes, very short clips, but just seeing an image of Terry Funk and Mick Foley landing on C4, a board covered in barbed wire that explodes. And that, I think that there's always been, you have your WWE fans,
right?
And then you have your tape traders, right? And there's like Hayabusa is so heavily documented,
right?
But the roots of the exposure of quote-unquote deathmatch wrestling did come from this resurgence that came around at the time that Foley was at a grand stage doing things like this. And it was at that
point... I don't think the average kid had seen that sort of stuff.
No, the average kid had not. But I think that for me, that my gateway into finding out about what was going on abroad, right? We were both ECW fans.
Yes.
But then you had Heat Wave 98, and that was the Hayabusa and Jinsei Shinzaki versus Rob Van Dam and Sabu. And all of a sudden you have this guy comes out that is essentially seemingly a Sabu clone. Right?
Are we talking about Hayabusa?
Yes, Hayabusa, he has the genie pants.
Right.
But he has the tabby boots, and then he has this badass mask.
I don't know that I would consider them genie pants, although they are baggy in the same way.
Yes.
It's the samurai pants.
Samurai pants, right. Genie pants for Sabu, samurai for Hayabusa. And then, for me, that's when I kind of started to look at Hayabusa, and I'm like, wait a second. This is the same guy that is Hannibal in WCW versus NWO World Tour.
Right.
This is the guy named Habanero for WCW versus the World for the Sony PlayStation.
His name was
Habanero in that game.
Wasn't it like Ha and then B is the middle initial?
No, it was just straight up Habanero. It was not clever at all. It was just...
By the way, someone get on that gimmick.
Yeah, by all means.
B. Nero.
Yes. And then that's when I had to beg my mom to get me Fire Pro Wrestling D for the Sega Dreamcast.
Right.
And when I got Fire Pro Wrestling D, which I was first like, no, I don't want to touch that game. It looks old. I want my wrestling games to look better than this.
Sure. That's funny hearing it come out of your mouth, seeing as how you don't play games that are older than 1997.
Yeah. No, I'm having a blast with my PlayStation right now.
Right.
And so you would end up, I ended up having to like clean my entire apartment for, I'd say probably the span of 3 months. And because you can't just buy the game, you have to end up I put a mod chip in my Dreamcast, which was stupid at the time, but I got one, I got the game imported, and then I ended up finding a translation save where it translated the entire roster into English.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I was finally starting to put the real names to all these faces. And then you find out that the Great Ninja is actually the Great Sasuke.
Yeah.
And you end up finding like, oh, wow. Like they're just changing these guys' names to avoid licensing issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then
it's strange that they don't own their likeness.
Well, I think that
some sort of international law.
It most likely. And
that's how that, what was it? Was it Nintendo's Pro Wrestling? What was the Ric Flair character?
Dick Slender. I'm pretty sure that's just his Fire Pro name, but that's just the
Dick Slender.
The Steiner brothers in the Fire Pro series were Big Schneider and Little Schneider.
Of course they are.
Yes.
Listen, I breeze over Dick Slender.
Yeah.
God damn. I mean, these. Hey, look, if a wrestling promotion said that their poster was a bunch of like 80s like bit style art.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, we're gonna have matches with Starman and Dick Slender.
I'm pretty sure in pro wrestling he was named differently, but Slender.
But the point is if I saw that card, I'd go, I will stop whatever I'm doing to be there.
Yeah.
Just to see all these wrestlers have a Halloween style night where they all dress up as Dick Slender and all these goofy characters with weird names.
King Kong Karn.
Right. And, who was that supposed to be?
Ah, man, I don't know on that one. That would be a deep dive for me. The Amazon was my personal favorite for pro wrestling on the NES.
Who was that? Hulk Hogan?
I don't think it was anybody. I think it was just a dude that had a piranha face that would like jump on people and bite them in the face.
Oh, right. I was like Starman.
Yeah, Starman was dope.
Starman was just a guy in a big pink suit that had a purple star on his face.
And he did that drop kick, that moonsault drop kick.
It was a terrible game, by the way.
I love that game.
It's awful.
A winner is you. So then you end up going on Google searches, and then all of a sudden you start finding these GeoCities tape trading pages.
Mm-hmm.
And then you send an email to somebody and like, hey, I want to send you $15 for this Best of Hayabusa. And I remember High Spots and RF Video were really the big proponents of bringing the bootleg tapes into Americans' hands.
Right.
And it unlocked this whole new world to me. And then by the time the Tokyo Pop stuff started coming out, I was super excited. But unfortunately, I think that everything about those Tokyo Pop releases were fantastic, with the exception of the actual production of the commentary.
Mm.
The commentary was just god awful.
The Japanese commentary?
No, the English commentary.
Oh, someone overdubbed their horseshit? Oh, yeah.
It was really bad.
Let's talk about that for a second, because there's a lot of indie stuff I see where I just cringe. I go, god damn, this is the shits.
Yeah.
Just some kid going, oh my fucking god, shit balls lick. Like, all right, guy, take it easy. What the fuck?
Well, I think that there may be a reason why that's happening, and there's a lot of people, I don't want to name names because I work with people.
Right.
But I will sing the praises of Jake Black, who used to be the commentator for Combat Zone Wrestling, who now does commentary for us, and he works his ass off, and he's very, very good at what he does.
Would you say that he's professional?
Oh, absolutely.
I guess you have to, because I just put you on the spot.
Yeah, probably one of the most consummate professionals that I have encountered. But you also have to understand that another thing that did happen that I was a huge fan of, that I know that you're going to scoff at,
okay,
was Strangle Fucking Mania.
I don't even know what that is.
Strangle Mania was...
You mean Strangle Fucking Mania?
No, just Strangle Mania.
Oh.
Strangle Mania was released by the Insane Clown Posse.
Oh.
And yeah. And listen. Okay, so...
I'm listening. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Strangle Mania, what they did is they made a compilation of all these cool matches that they got from tape trading.
Right.
And
it's Cactus Sack versus...
Cactus Sack versus Drunk Terry Flunk.
Right.
And on. Then there was a Sweaty Net and Armageddon. That was Combat Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the names were just absolutely hilarious. And honestly, the commentary I thought was funny.
Right.
It was I thought it was humorous. And I think that there's
I'll
another...
I'll take your age into consideration. Yeah,
there's another resurgence of, like, honestly, the old school tape trading days. And I think there's people that are heavily inspired by the Stranglemania tapes.
Mm.
So I think that that is what's happening right now. And one day, I'll probably convince you just to watch one Stranglemania match.
Oh, Lord.
Just one. And it'll be funny. Just remove any knowledge that you have of the Insane Clown Posse before you go into it.
Oh, trust me. I'll have to do that.
Yeah, I know. I know. So,
well, look, I'll say this. Like, as far as commentators, I miss the days of old where the guy who was the play-by-play was the biggest fucking square on the planet.
Yeah.
And the guy who was doing the interviews was even a bigger square.
Right.
Except for that, for some reason, he was known as Mean Gene Okerlund.
Yes.
Never mean at all.
Rather polite.
Yeah.
But he would stand up for himself. He wouldn't take no shit.
Yeah. Put that cigarette out.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you doing?
That was my favorite thing about Mean Gene, is he was incredulous to everything.
Yes.
Are you trying to tell me that such and such is such and such?
That's exactly what I'm saying to you, Mean Gene.
Oh, I can't believe it. He couldn't believe anything.
Yeah. Preposterous.
But I like the super professional. I almost miss, like, broadcasters like Lance Russell. Lance Russell didn't know anything about wrestling when he just happened to be the fucking weather guy or the news guy at that station.
He had a good voice. He looked good in a suit.
Yeah. And then, you know, then he's stuck between Jimmy Hart and Andy Kaufman while they're having a slap fight. And he's officially a part of the business, brother.
Yep.
But I like that old school, like, we have a broadcaster in these positions. And then you introduce these weird characters, or even if they're serious characters and they're talking weird shit, it lends an air of credibility to it. But when I hear a 15-year-old guy, I don't want to even say kid, 15-year-old's pretty mature as opposed to, we'll say, 12.
Yep.
Just yelling fucking and all this stuff. It's like, all right, geez, take it easy, man. What are we doing?
Well, and I think that, going back to the Tokyo...
I suppose it's just when you're older, you're a little bit more clever, I guess.
Yeah. I think that going back to the Tokyo Pop releases... So the Tokyo Pop releases, I think that they came out at a really good time. Like, I mean, they struck when the iron was hot.
Sure.
And
well, when a casual American audience became aware of this sort of stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that when you talk about Hayabusa, you have to really
talk about Onita.
No, before even talking about Onita, you have to talk about the Hayabusa was probably one of the first people that I would not one of the first people. He definitely was a front runner when it came to having a hybrid style.
Right.
Hayabusa would not, he didn't just do high flying stuff. He could also do some power moves. He right. also could do some technical wrestling.
Well, he's an innovator with Liger.
Yes.
In the junior heavyweight style.
And he also, like the Phoenix Splash, he invented that move.
I think he did the Falcon Arrow as well.
Yes. And both of those moves, I mean, Japanese press coverage went all over the place when the Phoenix Splash busted out. And I also do want to say there is a podcast, I believe, called 10 Bell that does a whole entire retrospective of Hayabusa. And it's very well done.
It's better than this.
Yeah, no, ours is better than
that. That's right. Take that, yeah. 10 Bell.
Jake Manning, who has worked for High Spots for years, and he was one of the people that was making the compilation tapes, is one of the people that is on that podcast. So I highly recommend that if you want more in-depth information, go and listen to that one. I can only tell you that through seeing Hayabusa, and I wish I still had it. Mm-hmm. It would be really hard to find, but I drew up sketches of how I wanted to be a masked wrestler when I saw Hayabusa.
Mm.
And I put thought and effort, and I had drawings, and I was a big Hayabusa fan.
I liked him as well. When I got those FMW tapes, he stood out to me because everyone else was just scarred up and fucked up looking and wearing street clothes. And here was a guy who took some of his money and invested it into his gear. And yep. it was obviously really impressive standing next to everyone he ever stood next to.
Right.
In that promotion. It was obvious why he was the ace, as they call it.
And the alliances that he had with some of my other favorite wrestlers like Jinsei Shinzaki and Masato Tanaka.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, one thing that I do also want to mention, too, is that there is a gentleman who had the screen name of Bahu. He has an FMW website, and it's fmwwrestling.us, I believe. And he also has a YouTube page called Brett's FMW. And he's trying
to drop some of them tapes on there.
Yeah. He owns the library, like the entire FMW library. So if you ever want to go and purchase any FMW stuff, go to his website and contact him. When I did the 24-hour FMW stream, he stayed almost the entire time.
Oh, very cool.
And he even chimed in with like the historical significance of all of the matches that were being played. And he has translated books. He has his own History of FMW podcast. Just the information's out there.
It's really nice to have this guy around because, quite honestly, I don't know that FMW would continue to exist in your average person's mind if not for this guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know that I'm going to have to get online and pull up some clips of Hayabusa and stuff, and I'm probably going to run into this guy's clips,
yep,
that he's put up and no one else's.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That happens sometimes with really old promotions that are here and gone.
Yep.
It's unfortunate.
And the history of FMW was also documented in The Dark Sides of the Ring. If you go and watch the episode based around FMW and Atsushi Onita.
I remember watching it when it came out. I haven't seen it since.
Yeah. And so it's just this. I don't know if it will ever happen again.
Welcome to a very special international version of the RF Video Shoot Interview Series. We are joined here by one of the most revolutionary figures in the world of professional wrestling. We are here with Japanese superstar Hayabusa, and also helping in translation will be Fumi Sayudo, a very popular and famous magazine editor in Japan for pro wrestling.
Okay.
That's right. First question for Hayabusa is, how did you get started in the wrestling business, and were you a fan of professional wrestling when you were a child?
So, desne. Dare kara desho? Saisho ni pro wrestling kyoumi o motta no ga shougakkou no daigakunen gurai no tokida
kara. He's been wrestling fan since he was in like a second, third grade.
Second, third grade
school.
De, sono toki no ichiban saisho no ore to itteru idol tte no ga
Mil Mascaras was his idol as a kid.
Yeah. Mascaras ga saisho no sono wrestler っていう印象。で、それから
the first major professional wrestler was Mil Mascaras.
Tiger Mask.
Then Tiger Mask.
Tiger Mask. Okay.
Original Tiger Mask.
Because most Japanese wrestlers, I say, either they like Tiger Mask or Terry Funk.
Terry Funk.
Everybody, either Tiger Mask or Terry Funk. So. Definitely a Tiger Mask
fan. Put Abby in there.
Abby, okay.
Dory Funk, Terry Funk.
Dory.
Tiger Mask からちゃんと見るようになって。
And start really following wrestling since Tiger Mask.
Tiger Mask.
で、その後はもう逆にマスクマンとか、その飛ぶ選手よりは結構大きい選手。
Then after that, he kind of pretty much, you know, got away from this flying and the mask thing and start really following wrestling wrestlers.
Okay.
The big guys.
Okay.
Heavyweights.
When you were a child, did you go to shows? Did you live in Tokyo area? What hometown?
Kyushu.
Kyushu Island. Kumamoto.
Okay.
Kumamoto.
Oh, same as Tajiri.
Kumamoto
Tajiri lives.
Right, same hometown.
South, okay.
So that means in a small town, you don't have much chance to go to live shows that often. The first live card ever was that the women's show, the grandfather of his, took him to. Mimi Hagiwara. Do you know?
Yeah, but like 84, 85?
Earlier.
Yeah. Oh, you're a child. Yeah. 70s.
Late 70s.
Yes.
70s. Yeah, late 70s.
What did you like about professional wrestling as a child that captured your imagination that you wanted? Did, at that time, did you want to be a professional wrestler when you became older?
Just broad, really vague. Never thought he was actually become a wrestler.
Okay.
See, when he became wrestler, when he was 22 years old, he was only 56 kilograms. Mm-hmm. Like, 165 pounds.
Right.
Very thin, you know. I was always skinny as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Never really thought about becoming a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like in his mind, big wrestler is a big Superman.
Right, right.
As you grow up, you kind of realize, I ain't going to be able to be Superman, the right. Big of a Superman.
So
didn't really think that he was going to become one.
Right.
What's the status of FMW now? Because if memory serves, Anita tried to restart it. It wasn't like electric FMW or something.
So our good buddy Tajir, who has the six-man... podcast that I was on. He went to one of the new FMW shows where they had like a exploding rocket. And he said it was one of the most incredible things that he's ever seen. And it's...
Oh, in Japan. He
in lives Japan. In Japan. Yes. And he definitely like would be able to... I'll contact him and ask him and we'll be able to find out in retrospect. Not retrospect.
Because I haven't heard anything about it since.
I think that that may have been all that they've done so far.
Because, I mean, as I understand, it was a big... I mean, I hate to say it. It was a big shit show.
Yeah.
But then a lot of FMW was kind of a big shit show.
Yeah.
You know, it was, to use the phrase, it was a bit of a garbage promotion.
It was absolutely a garbage promotion. And I'm butchering Tariq's name. My apologies. But... He got to see that event where they had this gigantic missile, and towards the end of FMW, stuff kind of got weird.
Towards the end?
Yeah. You had the anal explosive match.
Oh, my God. I'm not even familiar with this.
Yes.
What happens in an anal explosive match? This sounds like Vince Russo was booking it.
If you lose the match, you end up having a bottle rocket shoved up your bum hole, and it gets lit on fire.
Okay.
So when Hayabusa was 8, he had this match against Mr. Ganosuke. And it was during their feud. And he basically lit a bottle rocket up his butt.
Someone get Cornette on the phone. I'd like to hear his opinion on this.
Yes. Yes. I'm sure that he was a huge fan.
Absolutely.
It's one of those things that, like I said, I don't think that any of this stuff is ever going to be really replicated again.
Mm.
I think that...
I feel like it was kind of... It was a hit or miss at the time. I mean, it's interesting because, basically after Hayabusa paralyzed himself...
Yep.
It was not long before that, before FMW basically went under. He was their biggest star.
Yes. And it was a shame... Because
it'd be like if Hulk Hogan just disappeared in like 85 and the WWF would go along with it maybe a year later.
Well, it's it's crazy to think about the significance of just how much of a part of that company that Hayabusa was.
Right.
The person that bought it from Onita ended up committing suicide.
Right.
And I mean, that's tragic.
Yeah. And I believe if memory serves, there's, I mean, this has been going on forever, but the Japanese mob, what are they called again?
Yakuza.
Yeah. The Yakuza. There was some Yakuza money involved, and it's all very sketchy.
Well, but I mean, even Pride, the mixed martial arts company in Japan, was heavily funded by them as well.
Well, seemingly every Japanese company was and is. Wink, yeah. Wink.
Yeah. And I think that Hayabusa inspired a generation of wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that people were inspired by Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask. And
well, I feel like he came along at the exact same time as a whole string of other guys.
Mm-hmm.
The Benoits, the Ligers, the Malenkos, you know, these sort of shorter workers.
Yes.
You know, he just happened to be one of the guys who never, as far as I recall, never did a whole lot in America. I think maybe there was one match in ECW, as far as I recall. But
there, the other claim to fame that he has is there was a really bad movie called Backyard Dogs.
Oh.
That he was in. And man, it was bad. I think that even the guy that was the original Black Ranger for Power Rangers was in this movie as well. It's incredibly bad.
I don't know. I've seen some pretty bad movies. I used to have and maybe I'll start it up again, but I used to have a bad movie night where once a month people would come over to our house and basically talk shit about whatever movie was going on, and it was something normally really bad.
I remember watching Point Break with you guys.
That's a fucking great movie. No, I'm talking about like the Miami Connection and shit like this, stuff that you got to really dig deep for. I mean, The Room is almost low-hanging fruit. I wouldn't even bother.
Yeah.
There's even worse stuff out there.
There's a movie
I'm not talking about Trauma either.
There's a movie that I would bring to you called Martin Orloff, and it was basically done by the crew of the Upright Citizens Brigade.
Mm.
And
that sounds like it would be good.
It was good, but it's just really obscure and people don't know about it.
Oh, well, it would not fit our...
Fine, I'll watch the movie by my fucking self then.
Well, no, for this particular group of people, we were known as the Coxmen.
Yes.
It was Coxmen movie night. In fact, what ruined it all was somebody was like, oh, I think we should watch Scary Movie 6. And we were like, oh.
Yep. You killed it for everybody.
He didn't understand. It has to be a movie that tries to not be bad.
Troll 2.
But it perfect.
Yes. Yeah. Troll 2 fits into the criteria of that.
But Hayabusa, to me, was a diamond in the rough. FMW was a lot of trash. I liked it at the time because it was stuff that you had never seen before. You know, we're talking about a late teenage me, you know, seeing all this sort of, you know, bed of nails and, you know, all this sort of ridiculous stuff. Now, I would very quickly grow out of it. I seemed to go with the ebb and flow of the trends of the industry. And I really haven't looked back on some of the deathmatch and hardcore gimmicks since.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I even scoff at little things, you know, when are we going to do away with kendo sticks?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're overdone when they're just lying around underneath rings.
They'll go away when people stop reacting to noise in professional wrestling. That's why they stick around. That's why people use cookie sheets in matches, because they make noise.
I want more people to be in the industry to be creative. There are other things out there that make noises.
I'm going to tape a cookie sheet to a kendo stick.
Perfect.
Yeah. And then I'm going to take Tommy Dreamer's gimmick and be the new innovator of violence.
That's right. I don't know what to even add to that. There's got to be a better name. Well, the new original innovator of violence. I like whenever... another tag team comes along and they're
the new rockers,
the new originals,
the new original Midnight Express.
That's right. You'll be the new original innovator of violence.
Perfect.
Well, you'll have to come up with some interesting I mean, what are some of your other innovations? We've got the cookie sheet at the end of a kendo stick.
One time I glued thumbtacks to a boat oar, and that hurt really bad.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, that sucked.
You know, last week we didn't even talk about, because we just generally don't review wrestling shows every week, but last week was the juiciest fucking AEW episode I had ever seen.
Oh, yeah, it was a bloodbath.
I mean, first of all, Jon Moxley was on the show, so you know there was going to be someone wearing blood in the front row.
Yep.
But the opening match was Darby Allin and
Brody King.
And I don't know. There's some people out there who are real brave. I got to tell you, if Darby Allin was like, hey, I got this skateboard and it's got fucking thumbtacks glued haphazardly onto it, can I hit you with it? I'd go, fuck that.
I wouldn't necessarily say haphazardly. I'm pretty sure he took plenty of time putting those on that.
I'm sure he took plenty of time, but not enough. Because, I mean, he would hit, like, he would take a swing and hit the post, and they would come sailing off into the crowd and stuff. I mean, they were just falling off. I don't think he used a real good... You can't use Elmer's glue. Well, you need the hot glue gun.
Well, you want to use super glue. And the thing is that the visualization of having the thumbtacks go everywhere, there's actually a good buddy of mine, Dr. Redacted, who was also Dr. Cube in Kaiju Big Battle.
Mm.
He, one day I'm going to show him the secrets of putting thumbtacks onto things. And
is it really a secret? Crazy glue.
Yeah.
That's the secret.
Thanks for exposing the business, brother.
Crazy glue, I gotta say.
Where's the kayfabe? I'm joking.
Let me guess what's in every wrestler's gig bag. All right, we got trunks, we got boots, there's probably some knee pads in there, and the key ingredient, wrist tape, and then the key ingredient, crazy glue. It's for everything. You want to seal up a wound? Crazy glue.
You want to fucking prank somebody? You know, when you want to fuck with them, you want to crazy glue their boots to the fucking concrete.
You want
to
glue their gig bag shut.
Yep. Yep.
Put a little on the toilet seat.
Yeah, it's multi-purpose.
That's right.
But the one thing that I'll say is that I really enjoyed that casket match.
Put a little in the shampoo bottle, the old Police Academy 2 bit.
Oh, no.
When the guy's washing his hair.
Yeah, no.
But he comes out of the shower butt naked with both of his hands glued to his head.
Was Bobcat Goldthwait involved in that one?
You bet your fucking ass he was.
Oh, man. One of my personal heroes.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Big fan. Because of his movies?
No, because of his absolute just meltdown. He didn't want to be famous.
Sure.
So he went on the Tonight Show and set the couch on fire.
Right.
And then he also went on Arsenio Hall and just started breaking shit.
Right.
Then he disappeared for a really long time. And then...
Oh, he kind of disappeared. He was behind the scenes. I mean, he was the... He was the director of The Man Show forever.
Yeah.
Then went and ended up directing a bunch of TV shows. And then... Jimmy Kimmel Show, and that was his lead into movies.
And his movies are fantastic. Highly recommend World's Greatest Dad, God Bless America, fucking Shakes the Clown. Big fan of Bobcat. Huge fan of Bobcat.
I do love World's Greatest Dad.
It's more people need to see that movie. And an amazing soundtrack. Like, he put together a really good one for that movie.
He just had another movie come out. I don't know if you saw it.
I haven't seen it. It was a documentary on another comedian, wasn't it?
No, it was a documentary on himself and one of my favorite comedians, Dana Gould.
Yes.
They're friends, and they were going to document their comedy tour that they were doing. And right as they started, they got into a really bad car accident, like where they were really fucked up.
Yeah, I would be more than happy to watch this. But
it's called Joyride.
That's... sad.
Yeah.
I will definitely be willing to check that out, though. But I think that spinning back around to Hayabusa, he was kind of like this gateway for me, you know, into finding out about all these amazing things about professional wrestling that just really made me even more enamored with something that I already cared about. And then the neck break happened.
Ugh.
And that, much like Nick Mondo, was the person that inspired me to not want to pursue deathmatch wrestling as a career.
Hmm.
Hayabusa and...
He inspired you to not want to do springboards.
Not do moonsaults. And it's just the fact that he...
It's really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, he would do basically, what does Chris Jericho call it? The
lion salt, yes.
Lion salt. Basically, you got a guy in the lion face up in the ring. You run and you jump onto the second rope and flip backwards using the bounce of the rope to fling you backwards. And I don't think his foot slipped. I think the rope broke and he ate it.
The rope didn't break. It was just this, you could see that the force that he hit the rope already bounced the rope. So by the time he tried to rebound off the rope had already kind of snapped almost like a rubber band.
Right.
And
so it did break.
It didn't break. It just bounced. The rope didn't break itself. It was this recoil.
Oh, like some sort of double jump business?
Yes. And
he crowns himself.
It's something that he did so many times flawlessly,
sure,
effortlessly, and just one moment.
Yeah.
Just one moment.
I mean, I get cringe face whenever Chris Jericho does it.
Yeah.
Ever since. And I mean, part of it is I know about how much fucking baby oil gets worn,
which is another reason why I always yell at fucking people when
lacquer up. It's like you're getting this shit everywhere on the ropes, and then people go to stand on this shit and they're slipping off.
It is one of my biggest pet peeves. And listen, I understand that you want to look vascular,
right?
Get a tan and put some water on yourself, because that shit will dry.
Right?
Baby oil slicks everything up, right. And
remember when Steve Austin was supposed to win I guess he technically did win, but it was the Royal Rumble. He gets thrown and he's supposed to do the old rope hang spot.
Yep.
And he just goes the fuck out.
Well,
some greasy motherfucker was sliding up and down them ropes.
Yeah. And that's if your personal appearance means more to you than everyone else's safety, you're kind of a dick. And there's people that I will not name, and I constantly, constantly yell at their ass.
Right.
Constantly. Like, just knock it the fuck off. But it just shows that they're egotistical, and all they want to do is look good. And a fun story. This one's a little bit more fun.
Everyone wants to look good. How about if you're gonna lacquer up, you're not allowed to touch the ropes.
Yeah, there you go.
You just got to put everyone in a fucking headlock and hold it for 15 minutes until the bell rings.
That's
and
it.
And then get out without touching any of the ropes.
So not a very popular figure in the world anymore, but before he was very quick to spout off all of his opinions on the internet, Austin Aries did a Future Stars of Wrestling show. And the way they set the show up is the show was going to start with a big battle royal. And Austin Aries was going to be one of the first people in the ring, and he was going to work with a series of the younger kids. So it's a way for everyone to kind of get in the ring with somebody that's experienced. He was going to be the first person in, and then him and Funny Bone were going to be, I think, in the final four. Somehow they were going to challenge each other to a match later on in the night. in the main event. And Austin Aries had a, the move is called a bandera. And it's a spot where if I'm in the corner and my back's to the turnbuckle and somebody runs at me, I'll put my hand on the second rope and then I will use my arm to catapult them from inside of the ring to the ring apron or sometimes to the outside.
With your legs?
With my arm.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh, yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Some people also call it a flag.
Right.
And Austin Aries used to have a spot where he would get flagged to the ring apron, but then he would bring himself back in and hit a really nasty back elbow.
Right.
Well, Austin Aries, you know, the vascular vegan that he is, he oils himself up, and he ended up being first eliminated.
He's cut, brother.
Yeah, no, he at least had a good enough sense of humor to be like, well, guess I'm not going to oil up that much anymore.
Right.
And so he laughed about it, but
this guy's a veteran. You think he would know?
Yeah. Right. But you know,
shit happens, whatever.
Anything to make your pecs look good, I guess.
Sure. I mean, if I had pecs, I'd grease them up.
You'd grease them up? What type of grease would you use?
Not for the red, a little Crisco.
Crisco, just a little bit. Just that way, if you need a little snack, you can just like take a dollop right off of the crease.
I'd probably cut it with something, a little oil and vinegar or something.
Yeah, so some fish and chips going on. You're going to put the basket right on your chest.
The Italian sandwich on my chest.
Delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Delicious. But you had this very tragic thing happened, and I remember, like, I cried when I saw the footage. It's
not good to look at.
It's so harrowing. And there's Jake Manning mentions it in that podcast that the clip on YouTube just shows the neck break. It doesn't show the aftermath. It doesn't.
Christ, he like lies there for 20 minutes.
Not only does he lie there for 20 minutes, but he actually grabs the fucking, he calls to have a microphone given to him.
Right.
And he basically apologizes for this and begs people to still support the fucking company.
Mm.
And then you have this message that like every year that passed after his neck break, the only thing that he would say is one day Hayabusa will be in a wrestling ring again.
Right.
And at first he thought there was a possibility to where he would be able to rehabilitate himself enough to where he'd be able to get through a match. And then eventually I think he realized that that wasn't going to be a thing. And it just turned into, well, I at least want to be able to
walk.
And that happened.
Right. It was pretty crazy.
And
it's crazy that someone paralyzed got to a point where they were at least, you know, standing and walking again.
And the amount of community outreach that he did, he would show up to schools and Special Olympics events and just really trying to spread this message of positivity when how could you be positive?
Probably don't just a really good dude.
And yeah, but even if you're a really good dude, I don't even know if that I could do that. And I would like to consider myself to be an okay human being.
I think that you almost have to when you have that sort of, you know, you can either go that way or you can end up like Lieutenant Dan
ice cream
at the fucking, at the New Year's Eve party. Just like,
yeah.
God damn.
And it's just something that I think a lot of people need to really look at what they're doing. Like if you want to be a flyer, that's sensational.
Right.
You know, and even if you're safe, even if you're flawless, right? Obviously there is something can happen at any time.
Yeah.
And that's whether you're walking outside or not. But, you know, much like the story of Icarus, you know, if you fly too close to the sun on wings made of wax, they might melt.
Wow. Metaphors. Yeah, it's interesting. I imagine if my main move was a lion salt or whatever, springboard moonsault, I would be the one who put the ropes up every night.
Yeah.
In the same way that if I were to go parachuting right now, I'd probably pack my own chute.
Yeah.
You know, tough. Unfortunately, the pioneers are the ones that eat it.
Yeah.
So that's the way it is.
It's a sad state of affairs, but...
And then he died early on top of all that shit.
Well, I don't even necessarily... I wouldn't necessarily say that he died early.
Buddy, I'm 44. I think he died at like 47 or something.
Yeah. His recovery was remarkable.
Yeah.
And
that's the other crazy thing. Like, I can walk again. Like, hooray. And then he's gone.
Yep.
A bummer.
Well, for those that want to have a little bit more fun when it comes to listening to this, you can actually find his albums on Spotify. He has 4 albums.
Yeah.
He ended
solo
up,
albums.
Yeah. No, not solo. There's one that he did with Dragon Kid from Dragon Gate.
Yeah. You said, I'm aware of that.
Yes. Yeah.
And he has 3 solo albums and then all this other weird stuff.
Yeah. And he, very talented singer.
I'll have to find out for myself.
Yeah. I was a fan.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand Japanese, but he had a very nice voice.
Oh, one of my favorite bands is Japanese.
King X?
Poly Six.
Poly Six.
Like the Japanese Devo. Sort of half electronica, half live instruments, freak out rock.
That sounds awesome.
Oh, they're the dopest band you'll ever see.
Hell yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
But I don't speak Japanese, so it's you know, whatever.
Glad that Google Translate's doing a fantastic job with translating Japanese text now.
Well, the great thing about music is I don't need to know whatever they're saying.
You just need to listen to music.
Completely unimportant. I fucking look at these guys spazzing out and freaking out, and it's like, I'm getting the shakes.
Yep.
I'm getting the Holy Spirit.
There it is.
Mercy.
Hallelujah.
Well... I mean, I hate to wrap it up like this, but, you know, what do you think in retrospect? Let's think about FMW as a whole and Hayabusa as a whole.
It is worth going and once again, go to Brett's YouTube channel and find the matches are there. There's,
I mean, technically you could just get on YouTube and just put in FMW. You're going to get his channel.
Yeah. You're going to get his channel. And
because he is the one providing all this stuff.
Yep. And just watch the matches and also the run that him and Jinsei had.
What's his exploding anus match?
Yeah, I'm sure it's on there. But he also had a series of matches in All Japan Pro Wrestling as well that are worth watching.
Can I say something?
Yeah, please.
As it concerns the exploding anus match. What was it really called?
I'm pretty sure that's what it was called.
God damn.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here it is. Where's your personal line in the sand for, like, when someone comes up to you and they're like, I got an idea, Cody. And then they go, you're going to have a this kind of match. And you go, can we not? What's that line in the sand for you? Now, I know you to be a very nerdy hardcore wrestling fan, and there's not a whole lot that's off the table. There's got to be something.
There's been plenty of things that I've said no to, and I'm like, hey, man, that sounds great. You're the one that's going under, right?
Oh, so it only matters if you win.
Yeah, brother, I ain't taking that shit.
It's not about like moves that are being done to you, but like just some sort of concept. Like, hey, I got that one of these clips that goes around pretty regularly now are all these sort of exploding barbed wire baseball bats.
Oh, one of my dream matches is an exploding barbed wire match because of FMW.
Right.
I just don't think that America has ever been able to pull it off, and I have a theory with that, and I think it's because that we
Asians are better at fireworks.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it just like that. I was about to say that American
send your hate mail to turnbuckleboogie@gmail.com.
I was going to say that I think American pyrotechnic restrictions are a bit tighter out here, but
dear Timothy Styles, I think you're racist. The end.
But
well, am I wrong?
No, I mean, I don't know. Like, are you wrong with what?
Hey, look, we have a big fireworks show out here in Las Vegas every year, and I'm willing to bet all those big cannons that are going off direct from somewhere overseas.
And that's, I mean, if anything, it's a tribute to their ingenuity. Let's
name all the races and what they're good at. I'm just kidding.
Fuck.
I said what they're good at.
Well, and here it's been great, guys. Turnbuckle Boogie's getting canceled. We didn't even make it to Boogie Mania 3.
Oh, please.
Well, but there's been things I've said no to before. And I think that it's just one of those things that sometimes I have to make things make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I can honestly tell you that I don't think in the sake of anything would I ever stick a bottle rocket directly in my sphincter. I don't think I'd have it go off near me. I don't know if I was properly protected, I wouldn't mind somebody shooting one at me.
You remember, do you remember Naked Gun 2.5?
Yes, I watched a lot of those movies when I was young, but
this isn't going to help that you blanked on it for a second. There's a scene in there where they go to a sex store. They're the detectives, and they go to ask questions of the worker at the sex store. And at a certain point, it cuts over to, who is it, Ed Asner or Ernest Borgnine? I forget whoever the sidekick is. But he pulls up like a big, it looks like a leaf blower, but it's got a big shaky dildo on the end of it. You know, and it starts up. Bah, 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 bah,
I always watched them on Comedy Central, so I'm pretty sure that was like edited out.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, it's a funny scene. Anyway, what if somebody came to you, match, and was like, or came to you and said, I got an idea for a match. loser gets cornholed by this thing I made in my garage with a big giant dick on the end of it.
Well,
it'll be funny. By the way, you got to lose, though, because I can't. I can't look weak in front of my parents or whatever they say.
Well, I'm so sorry, but you're going to have to find somebody else to work that match, brother.
So we found the line in the sand. No butt stuff for Cody.
Well, and there's a few things that I've said. No gussets.
What's a gusset?
I'll show you a picture later.
Please describe.
They're the little tiny plates that you use to hinge pieces of wood in order to build a frame or a foundation. Yeah.
First of all, let me say, I'm very proud of you for saying that.
Yeah.
Because honestly, one of my, where I was embarrassed to be a pro wrestling fan was when I was watching, I think, a Vice documentary, and it was on CZW. And it's, you know, it's just some nobody. It's some big 500-pound fat guy, and somebody hammers into his skull, on top of his skull.
Yep.
Like a, I don't know, it was called a road pylon or whatever it is, just those little discs.
And they couldn't, and they couldn't get it out.
The worst was watching them behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. By the way, just behind some bed sheets in a field somewhere.
Yep.
You know, with giant pliers trying to pull this thing out of this idiot's head.
Right.
And it just, like, it just wasn't coming out. It's like, who the fuck would agree to this stupid shit?
Well, and I think that that is...
But anyway, it led to, I was disgusted on behalf of the entire industry.
And I've done, and I've done, and I will probably do more death matches, and sure, I'll, at some point I'll probably do some crazy shit, but I have to always evaluate the risk versus the reward.
Right.
And it, once again, like Dr. Redacted, really cool dude. He does gusset spots, and he hasn't, he's been able to do them without having them stuck so far in his body that he has to have somebody pry him out.
Right.
But even then, it's just one of those things of like, I can do some other things, but there's plenty of stuff that I've said no to, you know, like hell, I even tried saying no to that last ladder match that I was in, but then my fucking promoter talked me into it anyway. So, but, I think that in closing, I don't think it's the smartest idea to put fireworks up your anal cavity, but
tell that to Steve-O.
Yeah. Hey, I'm not going to say anything, man, because I can tell you this much right now. Hayabusa's made more money than me, and so is Steve-O.
Did Hayabusa never stuck anything up his butt?
Yeah, the bottle rocket.
Oh, he lost that
match. He lost the match. Oh.
You know, my memory is that he never did any of that shit. Or he did, obviously, oh, he exploding did barbed wire stuff, but...
Yeah.
But I don't remember any, like, the little wacky gimmicks. I just remember him standing out amongst Onita and everyone because he was wearing impeccable gear, and he looked like he was actually trained as opposed to everyone else who was having a garbage match, basically. It was like if Liger was in the ring with... Sandman, yeah, and you know what I mean, like and New Jack,
and
that's what it was like.
Mr. Pogo, who would use the martial art, I don't know the name of the weapon, but it's like a scythe. Like he
a
got
scythe,
yeah.
You like never, that you cut wheat with,
yeah. But it's you hold it in your hand.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
yeah. It's got a chain on the end.
Yes,
yeah.
Like he got cut with those. You know, and sure, things like that.
Blade on it.
Yeah. And so I think it's just a matter of whatever you're going to do in professional wrestling, make sure that you're doing it safely. You got to be able to walk the next day. And you don't have to do flips in order to get over. But if you're good at them, just realize that there could be a price to pay.
Sure. Yeah, there's definitely a cost.
Yeah.
I don't recall Tajiri doing a whole lot. Maybe a moonsault here or there.
He did the exact same moonsaults that Hayabusa did.
Sure.
Yeah. It's just, unfortunately, you know.
It's all about that miss, son. And the tarantula.
Yes. And the handspring elbow.
Yep.
And the head kicks.
He's a fucking Japanese buzzsaw.
Yeah, man.
God damn, I love Tajiri.
Yeah, Tajiri was definitely a good one, and I really...
He had a book come out recently, I believe.
I heard about that. I would love to read it.
Yeah, there's a couple books. His book I'd be interested in reading, I think Brian Gewirtz, The Rock's right-hand man, former writer of WWE programming for years. He wrote a book that I hear is very good.
It'd be good read.
Sure, if you want to hear stories about John Cena or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe he has something fun to say about Kevin Dunn, that piece of turd.
Oh, my goodness. How much longer do you think he has on the docket?
Kevin Dunn?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. When you're in a position like that, it's like you're in a pretty important role. And it's, if you're the only one who knows what you're doing, you could have a job secured for a very long time. You know, and I know that over at Full Sail, they were trying to train camera guys and truck guys and, you know, all these sort of people. But it's hard to just switch out a guy who's been producing your programming for decades at this point. But good God, I hope it's sooner than later.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I know everyone's super excited about this, but I do think it's silly that people pop when someone says wrestling or belt. Like, as well, if that's some sort of big thing. It's like, no, it's not a big thing. Everyone does it everywhere else except here.
Well, but I think that that gives people hope, you know, like just changing that vernacular, because in the same breath, I remember complaining about them not saying the word wrestler.
At this point, though, it's like if MTV all of a sudden showed up one music video, you'd go, oh, okay, whoopee, so what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's been without music videos for long enough that I don't give a fuck anymore.
Right. There's actually that Bob Diedrick dude, or Rob Diedrick.
Yeah. Rob Diedrick.
Yeah, him. There's an interesting like deep dive that I saw on him, and he basically just like owns all the airtime on MTV now with that show Ridiculousness.
Is that still what's going on that channel?
From what I understand.
All I know is that whenever I turn on cable, every channel I'm interested in watching either is showing South Park for 24 hours straight or The Office 24 hours straight or something with Guy Fieri on it.
Hey, let's go to Flavortown, bitch.
That guy loves eating barbecue, and I love to watch him eat barbecue.
And that cheeseburger ravioli.
Oh, gross.
What? No, come on. What a marvelous invention.
Rest in peace, Hayabusa.
No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. If the sky doesn't fall, I'm going to fall on my dad. Should be tremble as I see. I won't cry, no, I won't.
初めてのフェイスロック。